You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
Why are you shrouded in something white, Mickey?
Bob, I've discovered that you are a guru.
Oh, that's true.
You're my guru.
I'm available for everyone, Mickey. Yeah, but I was the podcast Decoding the Gurus did a whole episode on me. They decoded me.
So I've sold all my worldly possessions, and I'm going to follow you into the truth. And if you notice, I've applied the ashes on my head.
Ashes on the forehead. I was just about to say, but do you have the ashes on the forehead? And you're there.
And they're the mark of W. Mm-hmm. Or right. That's the best I could do.
Yeah, that's I can see it. Yeah.
And I do have the votive candles.
But good. Good.
The votive candles are you know, they're not.
That's nice. You got a lot of them. A little bit of a fire hazard, Mickey.
It's hard for me to get them in the frame.
Without, that was impressive.
Without a huge fire hazard.
But now, you said you sold all your possessions, but unless I'm mistaken, Mickey, the proceeds have not been deposited in my guru bank account. What did you do with the money?
Well, Bob, I'm going through a crisis of conscience because I am confused, and I look forward to you explaining to me, oh master, the truth. Because last week, master, you said Russian troops wouldn't go into Kiev, and you didn't think that that Putin wanted to decapitate the Russian government, the Ukrainian government, and yet that seems exactly what he's doing. So explain to me, Guru, how to reconcile these thoughts.
Well, first of all, asking critical questions of the Guru is not a sign of spiritual growth, okay? So maybe you should redirect this discourse in a way that would be more suggestive that you're making progress. I'm going to give you a second chance. Say something else.
How could you have been so wrong?
That wasn't what I had in mind.
Now wait.
What I said...
You're about to have an apostate here. I'm losing my innocence. I'm losing my
what I said faith, was I didn't think Russian troops would try to occupy Kiev. He hasn't tried to do that yet. They're not there yet as we record. Now, I'm not saying that in general I haven't revised my thinking. I think lots of people are surprised by the magnitude of the invasion and the nature of it. The only people who aren't are the people who are just going on Biden's intelligence reports. That's what they were suggesting. But if you look at what all the experts were saying a month ago, you know, most people were suggesting something a little shy of this. Not everybody. Who's that Colonel McGregor guy you sent me a post from? I had heard him a month ago saying, you know, he might take everything up to the Dnieper River south of Kyiv, even including Odessa. Well, he was a little shy because he now has Kyiv just about surrounded, I guess. But it we'll see what exactly he tries.
Just for the record, the headline on Blogging Heads from 2 weeks ago was, Bob, I don't see Putin doing regime change in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, I think now he definitely wants regime change. What I said was, I don't see how he does coherent regime change. You can destabilize a regime, you can sow chaos, but you put your guy in a way that works. I still don't see exactly how he does that, how that works in the long run.
But this is the great question, because he has 150,000 troops, which is not enough to permanently occupy Ukraine. So he kills Zelensky and appoints, you know, a mini me as head of Ukraine, and leaves. Unless he leaves and triples the number of troops there, that guy is not, as Fred Kaplan said in Slate, that guy is not going to be able to rule the country. So, what does he hope to accomplish? It I don't quite understand it either.
Well, you can imagine him trying to, I mean, first of all, right now there is the distinct possibility that they will stop and talk this thing over. You know, interestingly, I think it was China that said Russia is open to talks or something. There's some confusion over.
And Zelensky said he was willing to talk about being a neutral country.
Right. Right.
Which is very, very encouraging.
Which we, some of us were saying, you know, Biden should have offered to begin with.
That's beyond not joining NATO. That's being Finland.
Well, it's not that different from just not. It's not that different. The implications are, I mean, the additional, in a way, well, it's kind of tantamount to that. I mean, neutralization means you're not going to be part of our alliance. You're not going to be part of their alliance. But in any event, it does involve agreeing that Ukraine would never enter NATO. And so far as I can tell, we had not been willing to offer that before. I can imagine. And look, this will be a real, I mean, the other thing, I mean, look, there's no doubt that, you know, one of the horrible things about human nature and yourself you discover in situations like this is like there's this war going on and, you know, people are dying and you find yourself asking, wait, am I going to turn out to be wrong? That'll be embarrassing. I mean, there are people dying. That's more important, right? In theory, but you do find yourself asking that question. I mean, happily, in this case, wanting not to be wrong is right. Probably wanting the best thing for all the people here. But anyway, there's two fronts on which I may have some explaining to do. One is, you know, I wrote a piece for the Non-Zero newsletter Monday, and part of it was arguing that Putin's not crazy. And I was writing it and posting it just as he was delivering that speech on Monday that everybody said where he sounded crazy.
Although I'm not completely sure it was as crazy as, I mean, our press highlighted the crazy parts.
Yeah, but I will say this, you know, I taped this week's Tuesday edition of The Right Show is me talking to our friend Nikita Petrov, who is in St. Petersburg. And Nikita said, two relevant things. He said, you know, I'm worried. This is a lot of us feel this is kind of scary the way he sounded. And he said, look, a few weeks ago, I was saying no way he's going to try to occupy Kiev. It would be crazy. Now I'm not so sure. That's Nikita's read on the speech. And, you know, when you're trying to decide whether to trust a guy named Nikita and a guy named Bob in interpreting Vladimir Putin, I say go with a guy named Nikita.
Well, but you don't know. My question was, is Nikita free to say everything he thinks? But since that was an anti-Putin interpretation,
absolutely.
A fortiori, it was credible.
Yeah, no, I asked him in advance, if you don't feel free to speak, we shouldn't do this. And he clearly felt, well, I'm not saying he was taking no risks whatsoever. Maybe he was being courageous, but he was clearly being honest and he was worried.
If I remember, they'd have to find him, right? He broadcasts from a field somewhere in Russia. Which is a lot of territory to cover.
He's no longer there, but you do remember those days, yes.
So I thought Putin's speech he said two things that rang true to me. It was crazy, but two things rang true. One is that, and I think Nikita made this point too, is he sees Ukraine as a colony of the U.S. and the West. That's how they view it. And they're taking our orders. And it's not just that Victoria Nuland baked them cookies and selected their prime minister. It's just a sort of, they take all our orders. And the second thing is that eventually they will have nukes. And that's that's troubling to him, the same way Cuba having nukes would be troubling to us. So that seemed non-crazy.
No, he believes that. I mean, look, when you look at it from his point of view, and again, folks, disclaimer, to look at it from his point of view is not to say he's not to blame. He's clearly the one he's the criminal. He violated international law, invaded a country. In terms of illuminating why he might have done what he did, I mean, you're right. So first of all, there's the 2014 revolution in Ukraine, which he sees as a U.S.-backed coup. And look, that's not a completely crazy perception, given some evidence he has about our role in selecting the prime minister who took over after the pro-Russian president was chased out of Ukraine.
It was a coup. It did not
Yeah, it was a non-democratic transfer of power. The U.S. media depicts it as an expression of democratic sentiment. It was an expression of the sentiment of protesters in the more, you know, the less Russophilic part of Ukraine, in Kiev, you know, that's what it was.
You can't assume that the people in the Maidan were a majority of the country.
No, you can't. Now, as it happens, 2/3 of the country is native Ukrainian speakers, so it may well have had majority support, but it was a non-democratic transfer of power. The U.S. was involved, and he sees that as U.S.-backed coup. And then kind of since then, and here we get into resistance territory and the effect that the resistance had on Trump. Trump wound up sending weapons to Ukraine. And so, you know, in Putin's mind, there's just a steady encroachment. NATO gets closer and closer to the borders. It's on the borders in some places. They start sending weapons into Ukraine now, even though it's not in NATO. And then, you know, just to give you a reminder of the kind of double-edged sword that weapons provision is, if you want to ask, like, why did he ask suddenly and do a big invasion? I have no idea. But I apparently, the day of the invasion was the day that Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, I think they're shoulder fired, arrived in Ukraine from Latvia, a NATO member. I think they were sent at our request. I don't know if it was the first shipment, but Ukraine does not have many Stinger missiles, and they are a big deal. You can't be flying helicopters all over Ukraine if the population, you know, this is what did the Soviets in Afghanistan, the Stingers. But, so I'm just going to say, like, from Putin's point of view, it's like a steady encroachment. And he may be paranoid. He's certainly doing a hell of a lot of extrapolating to get all the way from Stingers to nuclear weapons. Right. But there was a sense that if you're going to act, you better act now.
My sense of I was all worried, like, had we made the offer to, you know, to not let them into NATO and if we didn't, if we did make the offer, why not make it public? And, you know, and I was assured by people, we didn't make the offer, but Biden said, you know, they're not joining NATO anytime soon or something. That should be enough for Putin. I take it we're way beyond that because nobody thinks that Putin would have bought just exclusion from NATO the way he's acted. And now he's invaded the country. And the question is, what are we going to do about it? Am I wrong about that?
We don't know. He wouldn't have bought an absolute guarantee of no NATO membership ever. What he said was, they've talked to me about temporary, you know, suspension of considering Ukraine for membership. That's not enough. I mean, remember, they feel that they were lied to about NATO expansion to begin with, that we made informal guarantees. And we did. We said things orally. And
I thought there were things on paper also.
I don't think there was anything formal. Okay. But there's no doubt that we said to the Soviets, yeah, this won't get past East Germany. And he's like, you know, I can't trust you. I want it on paper. I want it in public. And that's why it was so naive of some people to say, well, maybe we could tell him, hey, look, we can't back down in public, but we're going to trust us. We're not going to ever let Ukraine into NATO.
If Zelensky can be brought around to Finlandization now, why couldn't we have brought him around earlier and avoided the war?
I suspect we could have. I don't think the Biden... we don't know what they offered in private. I've been told it was more than we know of, but I think we would have heard if they had gone the whole nine yards. And I mean, not that that's all he was asking for, but Lavrov had said things that made it clear that that was like one of the couple of big things, like no more, like no Ukraine, you know, maybe no Georgia, who cares, but also some missile movement in Europe and stuff, which I think we would have been open to. And, I don't think we offered them Ukraine.
I think we're in the minority now. I want to read you something from Eurointelligence, which is a newsletter put out by a guy who's I believe used to work for the Financial Times. And this is from today's edition. As Bertol blah 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 writes in FAZ this morning, Vladimir Putin has destroyed several decades of German foreign policy consensus, including the foundational assumption that you have to understand Russia's position. In other words, the foundational assumption was what you call cognitive empathy. It had been the cross-party consensus in German politics that peace in Europe can only exist in cooperation with Russia, not in opposition to it. Even Scholz was clinging on to the notion until recently when he was still pushing for the Minsk process. Putin ended up deceiving those who wanted to build a bridge the most. And the new consensus is we were too nice to the Kremlin.
Do you know what he means by too nice to the Kremlin? We refused to do what he wanted to do. I mean, we didn't.
I think to understanding, to entendre is to whatever it is.
To forgive error, yes.
To explain everything is to
forgive all.
To be have too much cognitive empathy is to be have too much sympathy.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, again. Wise Americans have been noting for years that Russia would find NATO expansion deeply threatening. Most relevantly, I think Bill Burns, who's now head of the CIA, said in 2008, the year that Bush, you know, guaranteed eventual NATO membership for Ukraine, Burns said, it isn't just Putin. Every Russian elite thinks Ukraine is a red line.
But that's a different time frame, which I think we should talk about. But just in terms of the current negotiation, it just seems like we're losing the argument. You know, I would like to have it on the record that we made the offer and he turned it down. Then I could oppose him 100% instead of 90%. But
no. Well, I think a lot of people are like rethinking Putin because he gives this crazy sounding speech. He does this invasion that it's like, whoa, bombs are dropping everywhere. But I think the jury's out in the sense that. I think, look, they're surrounding Kiev even as we speak, and things may have changed by the time this airs. And look, if he starts randomly shelling the city, I will have to rethink my view of Putin because I don't know whether crazy is the word. That doesn't make sense to me. If, on the other hand, at the other extreme, he agrees to stop now and talk, and he could get a form of regime change in the sense that he could get Zelensky to maybe step down or who knows what he could get. But if he stops and talks, then, you know, we'll see. I mean, remember the you know, I think what shocked people was, oh, shit, he's doing all of Ukraine. OK, but actually, the bombs fell all over Ukraine. The troops are still east of the Dnieper River, with the exception, I assume, of Kiev itself, although it kind of straddles the river, I think. So I don't know where exactly they are, but it's not
he's
like
blocked up. He's blocked off the west, which is to the west of the Dnieper. So.
Well, yeah, I mean the troops are, by which you mean
he has a whole bunch of troops to the west of Kyiv, which is west of the Dnieper.
So then he's on the western side of Kyiv, yeah. But I mean, he shows no signs of like trying to occupy all of Ukraine.
Well, what if he captures or kills the President Zelensky? I mean, they were talking on the news that the best correspondence I could find was ABC, and they said, look, he knows whatever he has to do it quickly because his troops have poor morale. The body bags will start coming home. He can't like have a year-long war. So that implies some sort of surgical decapitation thing, which is what our intelligence is telling Biden, apparently.
Or you stop and talk, and the fighting ceases. I mean, that also...
Or you decapitate, and then you talk. I mean...
You know, but again...
From a position of strength.
But again, can he do coherent regime change that way? I don't... Again, I remain skeptical. Look, I'm not saying he won't do it, but if he does it, I will revise my view of how clear a thinker he is these days. And there is this view, by the way, you know, it had been the consensus really among Putin watchers, haters and non-haters that, look, he is, he's never gotten too far over his skis. He's never overplayed his hand. He is in a certain sense, actually risk averse, however ironic it sounds, given some of the bold things he's done. That was the consensus as of a year or two ago. There had been these murmurings that COVID, you know, he isolated himself and he's showing more and more signs of having, you know, fewer and fewer confidants and saying crazy stuff. There is this view that he's changed. Well, he could do things in Kiev that would convince me that that's the case. He hasn't quite done them yet, although I got to say, he's at least a little less risk averse than I had thought just by virtue of what he's done so far.
Would you send arms to Zelensky? He seems a very appealing character. Hard,
I always send arms to appealing characters.
It's a serious question.
I don't know. You hear both sides of this. I mean, my gut, you know, is like, yeah, I want to make Putin suffer.
What's the other side? I haven't heard the other side.
Oh, the other side is, well, Afghanistan. It's like we sent arms to Afghanistan and look at Afghanistan decades later. You know, that led to the creation of the Taliban, that, you know, or Syria. We funneled arms into Syria, the resistance. You know, it's a pretty bad track record of funneling like big arms in. I mean, the other thing I'd say is, I doubt you need that for a resistance to be untenable for Putin. I mean, I just don't. The Russian people aren't really behind this in a deep and broad-based way. And just try to imagine, how do you do an occupation of Kiev that works? Even if you assume that all the people have is a bunch of rifles and pistols and Molotov cocktails, and they do have somewhat more than that, but assume you only have that. How exactly, I mean, think about the mechanics of a resistance. If you're not going to have your soldiers walking around the streets, and if you do, right, some of them are going to get shot, then they're going to stay in their tanks and their armored personnel carriers. And if they stay there, it's not hard to throw Molotov cocktails at them.
And they're presumably, if the Iraqis can master the art of the IED, the Ukrainians can too.
All reports are that they're a spunky people.
Even with conventional arms, eventually you need more bullets and more guns and so.
Yeah, but to cut that off, you need a pervasive occupation to cut that kind of thing off.
Well, I have a three-part plan, which is I would give them arms, I would keep diplomacy open, and I would move to the countryside because there's a non-trivial chance of nuclear war. Because what happens when the arms start flowing in from the border, right, to Zelensky? If there's a resistance, suppose Putin doesn't win it in the next 2 weeks. There's a resistance, arms flow from NATO countries, not from us, but NATO countries on Ukraine's border. And Putin tries to stamp that out the way Nixon tried to stamp out the incursions from Cambodia. Mm-hmm. Then he's in a confrontation with a NATO country. Mm-hmm. Then Article 5 comes into play, and then we might well have a war with Russia. Plus, if he's cornered, if it looks like he's about to be humiliated, are we sure he won't resort to nuclear weapons? I'm not. Well, the Russians have never been as religious, I don't think, about first use as we have.
Oh, I think you'd have
With battlefield nukes, certainly. So it could be a disaster.
I think he'd have to have crossed the line to true insanity at that point. And I think there are real questions about whether he could get that order carried out. I mean, remember, he can't push the button himself. He's got to go through generals and so on. And these people talk among themselves. You know, it's like when Nixon was looking like he was going crazy and they had to talk among themselves. Right. And these things happen. Russia is not full of crazy people.
But the other possible scenario, apparently he gave a talk to businessmen and one of the head of the business, whatever the chamber, the local chamber of commerce for the nation, talked back to him and said, are you sure this isn't going to hurt us? You know, which was sort of unusual. Yeah.
Well,
it's also possible he could lose power.
Well, the other, even short of that, I think that could happen eventually. If he gets, you know, drawn into some kind of real quagmire here or starts seeming crazy, he could lose power. But I mean, that's, you know, a long shot hope. But I think in terms of his deciding, like, do I go into Kiev or do I stop and talk? He may be already paying attention to some of the domestic costs of a continued presence there. The anti-war demonstrations may have surprised him. There are Russian celebrities courageously online sending anti-war messages, you know, popular Russian celebrities. And he may not have expected this, and he may start wondering himself how long he can sustain this politically.
There are also reports, which are probably one-sided, it might be propaganda, that the Russian troops are not showing a whole lot of enthusiasm for this.
I don't know who to trust. I mean, look, they have overwhelming power. They already control the skies, I think. And that means...
No,
that,
they don't, according to the news reports.
They don't control... I mean, they lost one...
They don't have air complete dominance of this airspace.
Okay, well, if they don't, they will. If they don't, they will.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously.
And you know, once they do, you can't do things readily like, hey, let's move a bunch of these, these anti-tank weapons from this part of the country to that. That becomes a lot harder if the enemy completely controls the skies, just repositioning supplies and weapons. So I think it comes down to resistance.
But your point about them not wanting to leave their armored personnel carriers is relevant, because if they're gung-ho, they leave their armored personnel carriers, and there were reports that they weren't doing that in the early fighting.
On the outskirts of...
It could be propaganda. It could be complete bullshit.
I mean, I was imagining an urban presence. Try to imagine, how do you control a city? You can't control it in a fine-grained way if you don't get out of those things. And if you got out of them and everybody's got a rifle... You got to be worried about every window.
Yeah, it's Iraq all over again, where they're the U.S. Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know how many people have rifles and so on, but I think I will begin revising my view of Putin in a significant way if he tries to go in and actually occupy Kiev. I mean, stay there for a sustained period of time.
But you haven't answered the do we arm them question, and I don't see who the Taliban is. At the worst, we're giving arms to a bunch of anti-Semite fascists. Okay, we can deal with them.
How bad can that get? It's not like history. It's not like history warns.
No, but it's not like the Taliban, who have a claim to a vast the sympathies of a huge Muslim world, that's giving us a whole lot of trouble. Yeah. They will be local Ukrainian assholes, and most of them, I suspect, aren't assholes. So why not give them arms?
Yeah, I just haven't thought it through. If I did it, I would be very careful about what kind of arms and so on. Again, I don't think it takes that much to make this untenable for an occupation untenable for him if that's what he tries. There are various things he can try, but I don't think it takes that much. The other thing is, like, has he tried this in a modern kind of social media environment, modern media environment, where everything is recorded on cell phone and sent all over the internet? I mean, Crimea was a cakewalk because the population was so supportive. The Donbass, he kind of managed to pretend that there weren't actually Russian soldiers there. So, but these are soldiers in uniform. And there's a lot of smartphones in the world. And I just don't know if he's really thought this through.
The one interchange that's got a lot of publicity is this Russian soldier confronting an old woman. What the fuck are you doing here? And the guy handled it really well. You have to have sympathy with the guy. He said, now you're not gonna, it's not gonna go any easier if you have that attitude.
Wait, is she the one who said, I'm going to put sunflower seeds in your pocket so that when you die, sunflowers will grow?
Yes, yes, yes.
I want her as my bodyguard.
But I want him as my crisis manager. I mean, he said, look, this is going to go easier. If I'm just here. I'm just doing my job. Don't give me shit. Yeah. I have one criticism of the way, I don't feel especially hostile to the way Biden has handled this. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. It depends a lot on what was said in private, and we don't know what was said in private. But since he's not going to put troops on the ground, and 80% of the country wants the country armed, even the Ann Applebaum all the way, to half of the non-interventionist, people would also do that. He didn't have the leeway to fuck up. I mean, he basically had. It was a narrow lane. But I do think putting it all on sovereignty, saying he's invaded a sovereign country, has no purchase with the average voter. Sovereignty is an abstract lawyer's concept. And, you know, the voters are right. It is a collection of rights that we normally attribute to countries, but they don't have to all go together. You can have half sovereignty. You can have sovereignty over everything except your foreign policy. You can be Finlandized. It's like many legal terms in law school, you're taught to unpack it into the 20 rights that actually comprise sovereignty. Much better to say their right to self-determination and have the country they want. That actually means something to people. And so this lawyer talk of they violated international norms of sovereignty, that doesn't get Biden any votes at all.
I don't know what the political consequences for him are. As for sovereignty, I care about it a lot because that's a bedrock principle of international law. From my point of view, one of the worst things he's done is violate international law by invading a country and violating its sovereignty. That for me is bad. Now I know that's not your question. I'm not the voter you have in mind.
I just mean getting support. I don't mean like who's going to win the election. I mean, will his policy be supported? And, you know, he doesn't have all the country now. Even the people, nobody thinks it's all that important, but when they think about it, do people support Biden's policy? There's a whole chunk of people who don't.
Well, which policy? It's not like he's sending troops. Even if he sends arms, I don't think Americans think about that.
Well,
how many Americans
arms.
Know we sent arms to Syria?
Well,
how many of them even know?
Well, good. So we can send them arms and let them fight their guerrilla war, and while we go on about our business, that's the ideal solution.
I certainly don't think he pays a big political cost for that. He'll be rewarded by the blob and all the MSNBC, you know, talking heads.
The problem is he's talking to the blob and he's not talking to the people. If he's talking to the people, he would not use the word sovereignty. I don't like when the right uses it either. The right's always saying, you know, the UN invades our sovereignty. What the fuck does that mean? Why can't we give a little piece of our sovereignty to the UN?
Well, you can voluntarily give up sovereignty. That's what a treaty does in a certain sense. But when somebody invades you, that's different.
Right. My point.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. He's been too responsive to the blob. I think maybe had he not been, he would have seriously negotiated to begin with. And I'd like to hear all of the people who explicitly did not want to do that. Michael McFaul, don't make the concessions. Okay. Well, would you care to rethink that now that you've seen, and what would have been lost? Maybe it wouldn't have been enough. Okay. But it might have worked. Would that be a better place? Because let me continue. If he gets the concession now that we could have given him before he invaded, we are giving a reward for invasion, okay? As opposed to rewarding him for just amassing troops on a border. That's different. We are rewarding an actual violation of international law if we make Ukraine neutral now. And that is a consequence of the Michael McFaul's of the world and all the other blob heads who I completely cannot comprehend what goes on in their brains. But
the argument that was made to me when I said, why not make this public is, well, it'd be, you know, stabbing our Ukrainian friends. We'd be undermining our Ukrainian friends, but we're not their 100% allies. We're allowed to be a little bit of a middleman, I would think. Exactly parallel to what you just said, which we talked about, if Zelensky comes around now, why couldn't he have come around 2 months ago before his country was invaded?
Right. And again, we pay a much higher price for making the same concession now. And speaking of the abuse of the term sovereignty, all this shit about how, well, if we don't let them into NATO, we're not respecting their sovereignty. That's 100% bullshit. NATO you don't have a sovereign right to join any association. The association associations can exclude people. International alliances can exclude countries. You know.
I agree. That's a complete bullshit.
You want to hear the resistance blamed? I'll just read you a quick tweet from Max Abrams. He doesn't mention resistance, but the tweet is, Putin underestimated the effect of Russiagate on his Ukraine plans. He thought the West would care about as much as in 2014. He could then score some concessions without war. But Biden was in no mind to bargain, and neither was Europe. So Putin went ahead with a costly war for Russia. I don't think it's crazy to say that Russiagate.
What do you mean by Russiagate?
I mean, the way the resistance handled Russiagate and, right. And depicted Trump as a Russian stooge.
Right.
That was used by hawkish blobsters, especially including neocons, to turn progressives more anti-Russian than they had been. Okay. So Trump was the bad guy and he was in league with the Russians. So the Russians are horrible. And right, okay. And that helped set the climate in which this happened. I think there's really something to that. And of course, we now know that Russiagate, we are still looking in vain for the smoking gun. And more, it looks like it was cooked up by Hillary Clinton's friends.
I agree. I've been shocked at the level of antipathy to Russia on the left on Twitter. It's replaced. He's replaced Joe Rogan as a hate figure. I never thought that would happen. I mean, it's. I guess it's more constructive to hate Putin than to hate Joe Rogan. But it's like the left. I hew to my theory. The left has to have something to focus its ire on because the Biden presidency is going badly. So they can't talk about the Biden presidency. They don't want to talk about it. It has to be somebody like Rogan or Putin or somebody who's outside the Biden presidency. And now they have it. And I do think. Colt and Coulter is right to say that this helps Biden and that it changes the subject. His presidency was going terribly. His initiatives were bogged down. Now, instead of talking about the border and the failure of Build Back Better and inflation, we're talking about the war in which he's got a rate better than he does on inflation and the border. So it's the David Shore point. Change the subject. He changes the subject.
Also, I think, progressives in the progressive talking heads in the blob will, depending on how this turns out, could wind up trying to frame this as a big Biden win. I mean, if it's resolved peacefully, personally, it's a little bit of a reach, but it's not beyond. I mean, they're behind him so far, right? I mean, they're like, yeah, you really got the Europeans together. And I've been complaining, that's not enough. No, great. You got Putin in a corner. Now you got to give him a way out. We failed to do that. He invaded Ukraine, but they're not going to admit they were wrong. So they can't admit Biden was wrong.
It's one of the things that reading about this has a troubling thought that it's provoked is, well, first, a lot of it started with Bill Clinton. It was continued with Obama.
NATO expansion with Bill Clinton.
So the people who I sort of thought were good sort of made bad mistakes. It also calls into question the whole war in Serbia. I mean, I was friends with journalists and some of them resisted this, but by the end, the almost universal thought among journalists was we have to publicize the Serb atrocities so that NATO will bomb them and end the war, which is in fact what happened. And it looked like a 100% victory at the time. But if it's an ongoing Russian grievance that we didn't include them and that we ignored their allies and lied to them, that has flowered now with this aggression, maybe we should have just let the Serbs and the Sarajevo people fight it out and it wasn't any of our business.
There's two interventions. There's the intervention against the Bosnian Serbs in Bosnia.
I'm talking about the more palatable one, which is the first one.
I don't think...
The intervention against the Bosnian Serbs in Bosnia. Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's a big issue with Russia. Remember, that was approved by the Security Council. They could have vetoed it. Russia could have vetoed that. It had the Security Council authorization. The one that drives them crazy is 1999 in Serbia... in Kosovo specifically, which was part of Serbia, because it did not have UN authorization. It was NATO freelancing. It was a violation of international law by standard reckoning. It's a big grievance of theirs. I mean, Serbia was like a friend of theirs and also is an illustration of the kind of thing NATO might feel free to do. And when you hear people say, this would be the first time since World War II that borders have been changed by force, wrong. We hold that honor. 1999, Kosovo, we intervened. We got the border changed. It was illegal. And believe me, Vladimir Putin knows that. It is a huge grievance.
Was an actual border change? Because I thought the outcome was that the Serbs and the Albanians sort of live side by side separately, uncomfortably.
No, Kosovo is now recognized, I believe, by over 100 countries, including us, I believe, as an independent country. The border, where there had not been a border, there was one, just like if you cut Ukraine in half now. Very similar. I'm sorry, but it just,
If he was just cutting Ukraine in half, this would be less than half the story that it
and
is.
And folks, wait, I got to do the disclaimer. Okay. Folks, I'm not justifying what he did. It's because whenever anyone does this, it drives me crazy that I'm driven crazy. And yes, it especially drives me crazy maybe when my country does it, maybe. But that's my right? It's like my government's policy, I have a right to focus on changing and being outraged by if I want.
We shouldn't spend all our time on Serbia, but it seemed to me the whole purpose of the exercise was to get rid of Milosevic. It really didn't have anything to do with Kosovo. The idea was that, you know, we wanted him to sign these accords that were incredibly onerous. And when he didn't, you know, it would have allowed NATO troops to roam his country. And nobody's going to agree to that. And when he didn't agree, we decided to bomb him. What the hell? And get rid of him. And Kosovo was sort of a part of that. And it worked until now when there's a new Milosevic who's doing exactly the same thing. And they're about to restart the whole war all over again.
I forget the exact sequence. It was a classic thing. The Serbs were doing some bad stuff in Kosovo. I'm sure they were doing some ethnic cleansing. At the same time, the Kosovo Liberation Army wasn't a bunch of Mother Teresa's, you know. But as usual, the media coverage wasn't symmetrical.
In the first war, there were horrendous massacres and...
Oh, well, Bosnia, yeah. Genocide. I mean, that's the one that I supported, and that had Security Council authorization. That was, that was true wanton slaughter. I mean, they took, I think, thousands of males and executed them.
Yes, it did. Anyway, are we through with Ukraine? It's impossible. Hard to believe.
I'm just trying to think if I... I don't think there's much else I want to say. I mean, we'll see. It's a pivotal... I will say, it's sure hard to get work done during one of these things.
Turn off the TV.
Yeah, but you know, the TV is the least of it, because there's rarely any interesting news on actual TV. I mean,
I haven't found out how to get the most up to date.
It's not that easy. I think it would probably consist of creating a special Twitter list.
Somebody sent me a Twitter feed of something that aggregates tweets from Ukraine.
Send it to me.
Something like that would be the best. The New York Times is no good. It's a little behind, and B, it's this jumble of stuff that you can't really make heads or tails of. And the TV, at least they're right there. So if there's a bomb explosion, they'll report it to you, but they spend too much time on not reporting what's happening on the war and reporting on the reaction of the Ukrainian community in Chicago.
Well, and too much time on the bomb explosions. Like, if they can get footage of a correspondent talking while a bomb goes on, okay, that's the story. That's great TV. Sure.
The correspondents I've seen have been pretty much on the ball, and they've given you told you what you wanted to know. Like the guy who said Putin wants to end this fast. That was useful. I didn't realize that. Okay.
And yeah.
So anyway,
BBC is not bad if you're going to do, you know, streaming media.
The other weird thing is that the whole ecology of that has changed, because apparently these people are like, they're on camera like half of their waking hours. It's not like they don't do just one slot for the evening news. You know, they're on for the daytime broadcast. They're on for like the crap that they show on cable systems, like the one that I have. It's like a 24-hour raw feed of just everything they happen to slap up. Anyway. So you find out more from the correspondents than just the top line three sentences.
Yeah.
That's good. But anyway. I'll send you that link. We have at least two more things to talk about.
I can think of, I bet I can guess what they are. One of them surely is Judge Jackson.
Right. And
what's her name? Who is she? Is she the one from Carolina? Is she the one?
No. There are three candidates. One is the one from Carolina who was, I think, tarred as sort of a corporate type who Clyburn wanted. The other is the half-Jewish one from California who was incredibly appealing to people like me. Because she was, you know, she had a pretty good resume working in the Office of Legal Counsel, which is incredibly prestigious. You know, she seemed to she had a tenure as an appellate judge on the California Supreme Court that seemed to be okay. And she had glowing reviews all around. And then there's this other woman whose background is more of a, you know, she went to Harvard, worked for Breyer, the one who he's nominated, Judge Jackson, but her background is as a criminal defense lawyer. And that's fine. There's no criminal defense lawyers on the court. But at the moment, I would rather have somebody who didn't have that perspective. But, you know, it's only one vote. It's not the decisive vote. It's not the end of the world.
This is the Breyer clerk.
I think they were both Breyer. Yeah, the other one was the Stevens clerk, I think. Yeah, or maybe not a clerk at all.
So does this suggest there was a deal when Breyer resigned?
This certainly adds ammo to that, yeah.
Well, yeah. If that's what it took, I applaud it.
His praise for her just is not, did not seem wildly effusive.
Biden's or Breyer's?
Breyer's. Well, she has a different perspective and that's useful. It's not what they said about Eugene Volokh, which is, you know, a brilliant man like this comes along once in a generation.
Speaking of would-be Supreme Court justices, what's the deal with Lawrence Tribe? I mean, he finally deleted this tweet, but he was like accusing, I mean, maybe it was Tucker Carlson. And I suppose if you got to accuse somebody of treason, it might as well be him, but it's still just nutty shit. Like, because people seem to express sympathy for Putin's point of view or something, it's fucking treason. First of all, we're not even in this war. Okay. I mean, it was crazy. Tribe. I don't know what happened to him. You know,
I've hurled around charges of treason baselessly myself. So I have some sympathy. My line is, I don't know. He's always been bad at politics, always had been ham-handed at politics, sure on the law, bad at politics. And Twitter sort of liberated him in a field where he doesn't know how to proceed. And he also is trying for attention and trying to he always used to want to be on the Supreme Court. So he would try to, of course, suck up to the right Democrats. He's beyond that now. So I don't quite know why he's doing what he's doing.
The resistance turned him into a Twitter monster. It just got really weird from.
I got into one interaction with him where I misstated the law and he wrote back to me. He was very rational and didn't accuse me of being a traitor, just calmly pointed out where I'd misstated the law. So, you know, the good Larry Tribe is in there somewhere.
Still.
Anyway, the other thing to talk about, I assume A, she'll be confirmed, and B, if the Republicans are smart, they'll spend as little energy and, media time, FaceTime as possible fighting her. Just do what you have to do, vote the way you want to vote, and you'll lose, and she'll be on the court. And, you know, it won't change anything, so why not? The other thing is Trudeau. Trudeau, you know, he responded to the protest where the truckers blocked streets in Ottawa, which doesn't seem all that outlandish and violent. I mean, yes, they blocked the border bridges, but then they were cleared pretty rapidly. And after that, after they've been cleared, he decides, well, I'm going to do this unprecedented step of declaring a state of emergency, which gave him the power to freeze individual bank accounts without any due process. Just, he says, you know, freeze Bob Wright's bank account, boom, you're out of business, you can't spend any money. And those are like unprecedented powers, and everybody dawned on everybody. It's a lot easier to be a fascist if you don't actually have to go out and like arrest the truckers and move their trucks. You can just sit on your couch and like freeze their bank accounts. Couch potato fascism, I called it.
That's a good term.
Pretty good. Not that good. But anyway, There's a better term, but I didn't come up with it. Anyway, then all of a sudden...
What's the better term? Wait, there's a better term than couch potato fascism?
And you're not going to mention it, but somebody else will think
so. Just not invented here, so you're not even going to mention it?
I don't know it. Somebody else will come up with a better term.
There must be a better
one. It's very Chinese. It's very Chinese. Yeah, I think it's very similar. It's like social credit. It's like,
there's slacker fascism. Like,
Yeah.
That's good. That's not bad. We can do better.
Lazy fascism.
We'll do better in the parrot room. We'll do better.
Pajama fascism.
Pajama fascism. I think it would have to be pajama basement. Isn't that the standard image of the blogger, pajama guy with the pajamas?
Well, the standard thing is a pajama. You don't have to get dressed to be a fascist.
Pajama basement fascism has a kind of rhythm to it.
Yeah. I don't like the basement, but we can talk about it. Anyway, all of a sudden, like 2 days ago, he reverses field and says, after saying, well, we're going to need this state of emergency. They might come back. You know, you never know. And their justice minister, their minister said horrible things like, if you're sympathetic to Trump, you better watch out. You know, well, that's not a crime.
The justice minister said that?
Yeah, he said, if you're involved in the protest, then, you know, what does involved mean? Involved could mean, you sent an email to somebody saying, way to go. I mean, it was incredibly purposely overbroad. They were trying to scare people. But then after that, he suddenly drops it. He says, I'm revoking this state of emergency. I don't need it anymore. And why did he do that? Okay. There are like a couple of theories. One theory is the polls were sicky for him. Another theory is he had was going to have trouble getting it through the Senate. The Canadian House had approved it because he made a vote of no confidence. So if you voted against it, you were voting to bring down the government. Okay. So it passed. Because even the people in his party who had misgivings tended to vote for it, but it was going to have trouble in the Senate, where he got a lot of grief. There's a theory he dropped it because it might have failed in the Senate. And the third thing is that the banking industry went berserk and said, are you insane? Nobody's ever going to bank in Canada again because you have dictatorial powers to freeze their accounts. It's sort of similar to what we think might be happening to Putin, that the big business corporate lobby business roundtable gets together and tells the politicians what to do as opposed to vice versa. I don't know.
Which could be a source of hope with Ukraine, by the way. But
it was a source of hope in Canada, too. I mean, yeah. I don't think the state of emergency was bad.
I mean, you didn't mention, and maybe this wouldn't be consequential, but taking heat from the civil liberties lobby, which...
No, that was part of it, too.
Okay, that's what I saw online, was him taking heat from the Glenn Greenwald.
That was part of it. Yeah. And of course, what's the wackiest theory about Trudeau? Or this one of the wacky theories?
What is one of the wacky theories?
That he's Fidel Castro's son.
Wait. Which seriously?
Which would connect the crackdowns in Cuba and the crackdowns in Canada.
Wait, who is his seriously. Mother? Is his mother Maggie Trudeau?
Yeah, and they had like a they were swingers, and they had a swinging holiday in Havana with buddy Fidel.
You should have saved this for the parrot room. That's a great.
And if you look at pictures, it's not Frank Sinatra and Ronan Farrow, but it's not that far off.
Is there no resemblance to Pierre?
That's what I would want to see. I've seen a side by side of Justin and Fidel, but not Justin and Pierre.
You know, they should use the morphing software to, you know, like they should just do a merger of Maggie and Fidel and then a merger of Maggie and Pierre and then see which one looks more like the current Prime Minister of Canada.
And it's possible that the sites spreading the rumor have already used morphing software and have made Fidel look a lot more like Justin than he actually looked.
Well, this is definitely the best theory I've heard of why he froze the bank accounts. But it's those Fidel, it's the authoritarian genes he got from Fidel.
Exactly. It's the Bernstein principle at its most extreme.
Yep.
So anyway, that's... Now, those are my...
The only other thing...
Topic A's of the day.
The only other... I mean, we're about at an hour anyway, but the only other thing I can think of is it the case that in both the Arbery case and the George Floyd case, there were convictions on the federal civil rights charges this week? In other words, so that happened to happen both to this week. And had the
They're sort of bouncing the rubble in the Arbery case. I mean, those guys are never going to get out.
Yeah, okay, but what about the George Floyd case? So this included now I've forgotten the main detective's name, but this included the two other cops that were with him when he was kneeling on George Floyd's neck. And had they already been convicted in regular criminal court?
I don't know.
I'm skeptical of that. There is a chain of command in police land as in the military. And if your commander orders you to do something that's clearly a violation of law, you're not supposed to do it. But it's pretty extreme circumstances under which you're supposed to assault your commander, which is kind of what you'd be doing if you got physical about this. I mean, one of the guys said, he raised questions, right? He said, you sure about this? Why don't you, the guy was raising questions. Yeah. And remember, what was the damn guy's name? I can't believe the detective's name. Anyway, he had been their trainer, right? Hadn't at least one of them just gotten through being trained as a cop, gone through this, this training period, and the detective had been their guy. So he was they were young and new, and he was the boss, their boss in the most thoroughgoing sense. And I don't know, but
I agree. Well, it wouldn't be the only time that, a federal prosecution in a case like this went overboard. And they have an appeal. So maybe they'll win the appeal.
Was it Chavin? What's his name? Chavin? No,
he was the main one. He's the guy that convicted.
That's the name. That's the name I couldn't think of. So he was their boss, and he had trained them. And they were convicted for not staging a mutiny. I mean, I wish they had. Would have been great. But they probably would have gotten in trouble, because then George Floyd wouldn't have died. It's like, it wouldn't be like you saved a man's life. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Pushing your commander around when he's trying to arrest somebody. But anyway.
Do you sense that this is a subject about which I know nothing and have nothing to contribute?
Well, as you can tell, I know nothing. It's Chavin, I think. See, it's been all Ukraine all the time for me. I have not focused on anything else. So that's as good a reason as any to end this conversation now. What do we have for the Parrot Room at patreon.com/parrotroom, Mickey?
There are a bunch of interesting things. One is... there's a couple of Epstein things. It's why is everybody beating up on this journalist, Vicky Ward?
Well, an Epstein associate committed suicide this week, right?
I guess that's right. In prison, this French guy. Yeah, sorry, we didn't talk about that last week. Yes, it's like
we will talk about that.
They're dropping like flies, and why?
I even think maybe the security cameras went dead again. Isn't that funny?
It's not clear there was a security camera.
Oh, okay.
But we'll get into that. There was a very interesting article in the Daily Caller by Jim Pinkerton, former Bush aide, who says there are three choices for mankind. Go inward with the metaverse, go outward, go to Mars, and stay the same and try to live here in meat space. Those are our three spaces: Mars, Meta, or Meat. And I have some views on that. Maybe you do too.
That's great. Jim has always had this kind of sci-fi side.
No kidding. But you do too, man. Don't you have in non-zero? Don't we populate other planets?
I wouldn't go that far, but it is after he read Non-Zero that he invited me to speak at the New America Foundation back in the day.
There's a puffer on Dean Baquet in New Yorker, which has a couple of interesting aspects.
He is the editor of the New York Times.
There is this interesting essay on that Ross Douthat took up, which is instead of casting it as a straight meritocratic divide between credentialed elites and uncredentialed deplorables, it's virtuals versus reals, people who work on the screen in abstract and people who work with their hands in meat space. And we can talk about whether that adds anything to the discussion or not.
That's a good,
something. But
definitely,
anyway.
Definitely worth a column, which you got out of it.
Yeah, well, it's
definitely
based
worth
on
one column and one parrot room conversation at a minimum.
But it's based on a Substack, which went on and on forever. But yes, a Substack by the same guy who wrote the essay about wokeness not being dead and never being dead. Same, obviously a very smart guy who knows how to come up with.
Does he go by initials?
Topics.
He goes by initials.
NS Lyons, yes. NS Lyons, I think. Yeah. Apropos of that, Tyler Cowen predicted the end of wokeism. I don't believe him.
No.
New York Times has weird ads about J.K. Rowling. I guess we can talk about the virus if you want.
We don't have to, but I don't know. It's feeling freer and freer. It's feeling like, the big question is, will this new variant be trouble? And in any event, let's, carpe diem.
Does honk by the convoys mean Heil Hitler? And will there be convoys in America that have the same impact as in Canada? We don't know. I think I do know, but.
Heil convoys.
Bunch of people who died, the usual assortment of grievances and resentments that we've harbored for years. What could be more fun?
Did somebody die who you resent?
No, unless I...
That's an unusual week then.
Unless I really resented the singer of Procol Harum.
Is it Whiter Shade of Pale?
Yes.
That's a great song, don't you think?
It is a good song. We have Louis C.K. Guess where Louis C.K. is now?
I think we're bordering on overpromising, Mickey, because we haven't even gotten to my stuff.
Okay, well, my final one is Louis C.K. And what does it take to get
rehabilitated? To get uncanceled, yeah.
And you know what the answer is?
Quit masturbating in front of women who don't want to watch you do it?
That's not the answer, Bob.
No?
No, but okay, we'll talk about that.
Okay. Because that's what worked for me, I'll tell you. Some things on my wish list.
It started off with me in deep reverence and you've plunged it once again into the gutter.
Gurus keep their worshipers off balance. Worshipper isn't the term. What is the term for?
Followers? I don't know.
Followers. Okay. I want to talk a little bit more about is Putin crazy in light of this conversation I taped with a guy who hasn't come out yet, a politician who focuses on the role of status considerations in international relations, a political scientist. I want to talk about Douglas MacArthur as a role model, as a guy we should have listened to before we expanded NATO. Not that he had views on that per se, but I just finished finally this trilogy on the war in the Pacific. And by the way, I also want to mention, you have no idea what a fucking shit show the dropping of the second atomic bomb was. That's just a weird, I mean, we all know the horrible consequences, but the run-up was pretty weird. Talk about that. I'm ready to talk a little bit more about the show, The Expanse. I think I may have gotten to the part that you said is the last part that's worth watching.
The part where I stopped, there may be good stuff after it, but.
I want you to tell me if I was wrong to get pissed off at a guy on Twitter. I'll read you the exchange. He's like somebody I've had on my show. He wasn't a rando. I was pissed.
And he disrespected the Bob?
He disrespected the Bob.
We don't like that.
No, that's a good example of status considerations playing a role. You just have
to program us to attack Bob, and we, your followers, will do your bidding.
Thank you. So I guess that's about it. And so the place to hear more than 50% of that, and I would say possibly as much as 95% of it, is the Parrot Room, patreon.com/parrotroom. Also, Mickey, people should smash the like button. They should rate and review The Right Show, which is, however ironically, the current name of this podcast. Although sometimes in the Parrot Room, we discuss ways to create a forked version of it, as they say in Android land. What else? Your newsletter, Cal's Files.
I actually wrote one last week.
There you go.
It was shocking.
So it does happen.
I think I get more subscribers when I don't write, because they say, maybe if I subscribe, he won't write again.
Well, this is the paradox of newsletters is like, the time you lose subscribers is when you actually produce a newsletter, because you send it out and inevitably some people get it. The first thing that happens, some people get it and go, screw this shit, and cancel. You hope to compensate for that. I got a good break on that front this week.
Well, you can tell us later.
It's or never, as you would prefer.
As long as it wasn't Ezra Klein doing favors for you again.
It wasn't Ezra. It was the second God among men.
Okay, who was it? Tell me.
No, that's Parrot Room.
I thought I was the second God. You mean I'm number three at best? That's bad. Yeah.
I would emphasize the at best part. Yes, you can't be both one of my followers and a God among men. That would get too paradoxical. And also Twitter handles, Kaus Mickey, Robert Ryder. You got to do this kind of promotion, Mickey. You laugh. Okay, so let's have the parrot usher us into the room.
Bobism forever. Huh.
Uh-oh.
We love you, Bob. Should I relight the votive candles to give it organic unity?
I think we can hold off on that for now. You've been a good enough follower as it is. We'll see.
Not
you.
Easy.
I'm a very demanding guru. We'll see you in parrot room.
See ya.
All right.
All happening.